Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. Coming up, Lakers guard Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is going to join the show. A new champ. We'll talk about what it means to be an NBA title winner, as well as how Lakers players have been dealing with criticism from fans and then joy and adulation from Lakers fans. Stick around for that. First, though, some breaking news on The Jump. The Clippers and Ty Lue have agreed on a five-year deal to make him the team's new head coach, sources told our Adrian Wojnarowski. The sides completed negotiations Thursday afternoon. The Clippers' search landed on the 43-year-old Lue based on his championship pedigree, playoff successes as a head coach in Cleveland, as well as his strong ability to communicate with players, sources told Woj. We're going to bring in Woj because why not just go straight to the guy who has all the information? Woj, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us on what has been an incredibly busy day for you. What more can you tell us about how this Clippers arrangement came together? Because, of course, Ty was the speculative choice once Doc was let go. But there were a lot of questions about whether if you let go Doc Rivers, are you really going to want to go with his lead assistant? How did this all come together?
Rachel, you know, when they let Doc Rivers go, Steve Ballmer wanted to conduct a search. He wanted to go out and talk to other candidates, and they did that. They talked to, I think, at least probably close to 10 to 12 candidates around the league, maybe even more, and were serious about a couple. But they knew what they had in Ty Lue, and everybody was chasing him in this process. He was legitimately the favorite throughout, and I think as they went out and talked, I think it solidified the fact that the qualities that Ty Lue had, and you mentioned him as some I described in this story, he's won a championship. He has shown himself to be very tactically sound as a head coach and in the playoffs when you've got to make adjustments. He understands the glare of the spotlight that comes with a job like that. You get that in Cleveland coaching LeBron James. And the relationships and the coaching he's already done with the group they have, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, he was from the very beginning the favorite, and there was nothing in the process that dissuaded the Clippers from thinking that they had the right guy right there for them. Five-year contract, I'm told, and you know, they really see Ty Lue as somebody who's going to be a program builder, and they hope to have him in place for a very long time.
It's interesting when you look at his journey here, because he was offered the LA Lakers job last season, and he decided not to take it because of the kind of contract they offered him, because, and this is all from your reporting, you know, what they had decided about who his assistants would be. Do you think in the end, waiting that year, the Lakers went on and won the title without him, now he's with the Clippers, he's got the head job and the more favorable contract you just mentioned, do you think that in the end he's going to be happy with the way he played all of this?
Well, really only Ty will know that. Certainly with the Lakers, at the time, they hadn't made the trade yet for Anthony Davis, but I think there was optimism they could get it done. And you would probably assume it was a three-year deal they offered him at the time. And it was essentially the same deal Frank Vogel took with the Lakers. And, excuse me, you'd expect that at some point here, Frank Vogel, whether it's this year, next year, you know, might get an extension off that. But it's a decision that Ty Lue made in the moment. And now, listen, he gets a chance to stay in L.A., an organization that certainly has championship aspirations, but a team that very much underachieved, losing in the conference semifinals, blowing that 3-1 lead to Denver. And listen, there's a lot of work to be done within the Clippers to compete with the Lakers. They thought they would do that this year. They couldn't even get to that conference finals. But Ty Lue now certainly with an organization, Lawrence Frank as the president, Mike Winger, GM, Steve Ballmer, they know him, they believe in him. And he gets an opportunity here to, you know, now try to compete with a Laker team that he had for a very long time dreamed of coaching.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I think all of these chess moves, watching them play out over, in this case, a two-year span with Ty Lue and seeing him finally end up with the Clippers with this kind of contract. Of course, that's not all you've been doing today, Woj. Just following this story, you dropped another bomb just an hour or so ago. Rockets general manager Daryl Morey stepping down after 13 seasons with the franchise. Rockets are planning to promote executive vice president of basketball operations, Raphael Stone, to general manager, according to your sources. So what led to this decision with Daryl?
Yeah, Daryl Morey had been thinking about this, I'm told, in the bubble and then coming out of the bubble sitting down with Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets owner, and started a conversation about the idea that he might be ready to step away. As you said, 13 years as the GM, 14 years in Houston, a lot of success. They were the second winningest team in the league in the regular season over that period. Only the Spurs have won more, and 8 straight trips to the playoffs, didn't win a championship, didn't get to the finals, but everything short of that. And I think for Daryl Morey, it's a chance to sort of hit the reset button in his life. Both of his children are college age. They're going to be taking gap years during the pandemic, a chance to be with them. And I think Daryl Morey has aspirations to at some point return in the NBA on the team side. But, you know, he sat down with Fertitta. They went through this and finally came to an agreement. And Morey is going to continue. He's been involved in the coaching process, and he's going to kind of help shepherd them here until they get a hire and kind of in an advisory role as Stone now moves up and takes over as GM.
It's so interesting, and obviously such a tumultuous year for the Rockets, for Daryl Morey specifically, starting with that tweet and all that happened after that in China. But he's been a central figure in the NBA, as you note, for more than a decade, and it will be strange not to have him in the league next year. We certainly wish him the best with all he wants to explore, and we do hope that he comes back. Woj, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Maybe give that
phone a
rest for like 5 minutes before you throw us any more big Woj bombs, but we are on for the next hour, so anything you want to break in the next few minutes, just you feel free. So thank you so much.
Will do. Thanks, Rach.
All right, I now want to welcome in Matt Barnes, NBA champ, Amin Alhassan, our front office insider. Matt, as a former Clipper, how do you like the hiring of Ty Lue?
I like it, but this is one of probably the hottest seats in professional sports, considering all they gave away last year to get PG, having Kawhi. This is a very hot seat, so I'm hoping he's going into this situation surrounding himself with very quality assistant coaches. I hope my man Chauncey Billups, big shot, gets a chance to be possibly his lead assistant. But this is a very hot seat. The one thing I'll say about T. Lou is he's a very good communicator. So this is something that team is going to need, and I wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, Matt, it's a hot seat, but it's a hot seat because that roster is stacked. And it's so from that standpoint, it's a really good job. It's an opportunity for Ty Lue to walk in and take a team across the finish line, a team that is, for most, by most people's accounts, is ready to cross the finish line. And here's the reality. I think someone coming from outside probably wouldn't have understood the internal dynamics of why the Clippers failed. The Clippers failed for reasons other than not enough talent. And so with Ty having been there a year and knowing the guys and knowing the personalities, I think he's the right guy for the job to steer them because he knows what the problems are and he can address them as such as the head coach.
It is interesting that this is now going to be the second time Ty has done this, getting the head coach spot of a team that he was a primary assistant on because the team and the ownership decided that the guy in the head job, they needed to get him in a different place. So, Matt, what do you think of that progression? Just the idea that, okay, here's a guy who was in all the meetings, was in all the planning, was part of all those relationships, and now how much different do you think he's going to make things? He had obviously worked in Cleveland.
I think Amin hit it on the head. I mean, he's very familiar with that. Obviously, first and foremost, with the organization. He was there back when Doc first came with the Lob City team that I was there on, and then he comes back as Doc's lead assistant this year. So there's a lot of familiarity there. How much different is he than Doc? I mean, Doc has pretty much raised this guy as far as in the coaching ranks and given him some pretty quality opportunities and spoken on his behalf for him to get other jobs. So, like I said, it's going to be very interesting to see what he brings to the table because, like I said, it's not a lack of talent. It's just a lack of something else going on in that locker room that needs to be straightened out. So hopefully Ty is the guy that can straighten it out.
And you know what? Sometimes, Rachel, it's weird. Sometimes you need to hear the same message from a different voice. We see it all the time. It's not necessarily that Doc was doing the wrong things or coaching the wrong way. It's just sometimes he's been there so long, guys start to tune him out. And so having a different voice communicate the same thing, maybe in a slightly different fashion, can help. So even though Ty Lue, yes, he was part of the planning. Yes, he was in those coaches' meetings. And maybe his ideas aren't that drastically different from Doc's. But communicating it in a new voice in perhaps a different way sometimes gets the message across.
Well, he's such a smart coach, and his relationships with players are always so good. He will definitely be a new voice because he's a lot less raspy. But no, I think that I'm really looking forward to seeing how they can go from here, because that franchise and that roster has so much potential. And if you're an NBA fan, seeing great players do great things is something you should get excited about. I do want to hop over to Houston. What is your reaction, Amin, to Daryl Morey stepping down?
I'm not surprised. I kind of knew when he did the deal back earlier in the season to get Russell Westbrook. This was a swing for the fences deal. This was a, if I'm right, I'm a king. And if I'm wrong, things are probably going to get more pressure packed. And I know Adrian talked about how this was Daryl's decision and Daryl stepped away and Tillman didn't pressure him. He also mentioned that Tillman didn't fight for him either. And I'm going to address the elephant in the room. If you're going to be the general manager who cost me millions of dollars, you better be delivering a championship. You can't be the general manager who cost me millions of dollars and underachieves with the rosters that we have year in and year out. And so at some point, whatever sway, whatever power, whatever pull Daryl has starts to wane. And at that moment, I think Daryl realizes, do I want to be a part of this if my voice isn't as strong as it needs to be?
I think it's interesting. Normally when someone steps down, it's just a way of, you know, avoiding the word fired, right. Whether Daryl Morey went to them, or I know it was definitely in the cards. And like Amin said, there's a history to this, obviously, with everything that happened in China this year. His last 13 years, he built something, but I think they've kind of reached the ceiling with his strategy and his way of thinking. You know, analytics has changed the game, and it's definitely benefited Houston. You know, that they've had some great teams, and James Harden is arguably the best player as far as offensive talent in the game, but they really haven't got over that hump yet. So it's time to go in a new direction. They need a good head coach. And, you know, they got to restructure this roster a little bit, because this is built for D'Antoni and Daryl Morey type basketball. Neither of those guys are there anymore.
Well, I do buy the idea that he went to Fertitta and that this was the start of his idea, only in that this wasn't just a trying year for the Rockets. It was a pretty trying year for Daryl Morey, too, right? It's not like that whole experience wasn't, you know, it cost him a lot, too. And I think that there can definitely be a thing where it's just best for everyone to say, you know what, I'm going to step away for a minute. I was very interested in Woj's report, the idea that he's not even going to be in basketball and look for another basketball job for maybe at least another year. Daryl is just such a part of the fabric of the game and the way he's changed the approach of the game, especially from the front office. It's going to be weird to me, frankly, not to have a Daryl Morey type of team for everybody to sort of measure against in the league in terms of approach and design and style. But we won't, I guess. And I am impressed with all the changes that he made to the game over the last 10 years. I mean, what do you think his legacy sort of in, as a general manager is? And not that he's done working in the NBA, but for now as he steps away.
Right. You know, it's, in many ways, it's like Mike D'Antoni's. You can have an influence and an impact on the way people look at the game, and yet not you yourself became ultimately successful. Regardless of whether you like Mike or you don't like Mike, you look around the NBA, you see the emphasis on pick and roll, spread offense, and a lot of three-pointers. That's Mike D'Antoni. That's so what the Lakers did, what the Heat did, a lot of that is Mike D'Antoni. Same thing with Daryl Morey, the way he built teams, the way he mined for teams, mined for talent. He's underrated at his ability to get value out of kind of not the most obvious places. And so I think in that sense, he's going to influence a lot of people moving forward.
You definitely got to tip your hat to Morey and I'm forgetting his name now, head coach. They just lost.
Mike D'Antoni.
D'Antoni and Daryl Morey, because they've created fun basketball. I mean, the game is fun. Like you said, it's kind of a copycat league. So not saying that they copied them, but this style is kind of taken over basketball. But they haven't been able to get over the hump with it. You know, the Golden State Warriors will be able to have this type of basketball and win some championships. The Warriors, not really the same type. But, you know, when you say a lot of pick and rolls, they definitely run a lot of pick and rolls. But Houston was never able to get over that hump. So it was only a matter of time. You know, as great as he's been and has transcended the game somewhat, along with Mike D'Antoni, there's only so long you can underachieve in this league. So I think it's going to be good for him to take some time off, you know, kind of let that fire go out, because there is still some smoke from the China situation. And like you said, Rachel, it's been a tougher year for him overall. So taking a step back for a year or two, recharging his batteries, and we hope to see him back in the league in a few years.
By the way, I'm so happy that that happened to you because I am constantly searching for people's last names all the time.
It just went blank completely.
I'm not the only one. Coming up, we're going to have a lot more on this show. NBA champ Kentavious Caldwell-Pope joins us. We will ask him about winning the title and what he plans to do with that player option he has this offseason. First, though, here are a couple distant replays from this date in NBA history. This is not a normal offseason. We've got basketball plays to show you. Take a look.
DeRozan line drive, jumper won't go. Anderson, back to DeRozan, that will go.
Well, that's what they liked about this kid. Last year, he was a so-so player. They're hoping that he will blossom into an all-star type.
Zip that pass nicely to J.R. Smith. George fell down, J.R. kicks it.
Oh! J.R. Smith! Baby, and knock it down.
That's against a supreme defender in Paul George.
The Jump is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, who reminds you to enjoy responsibly.
Ballin', ballin', yeah, I'm ballin'. It's nothing, nothing. I do it often.
Drive to the rim, lays it up and in! Caldwell Pope! Huge points for the Lakers.
James, Caldwell Pope, pucks it in!
Run, shovel pass, KCP flying at the rim.
Draws the foul, banks it home, and one!
Bang!
It's a great feeling to be all world champs.
Welcome back to The Jump. We are now joined by NBA champ, boy, that's fun to say, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Congrats on winning your first championship. How does it feel to be walking around this week and have everyone say, champ, 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 champ?
I mean, it feels great, you know, just to have that name attached to mine. I went home first after the bubble, mm-hmm. you know, to be around family, especially my boys that I missed for 3 months. And that's all I was hearing. No, it feels wonderful.
How long does this last? How long do you celebrate for? This is number one in year seven. Hopefully you get some more before you're done, but how long does the celebration last? Cause it usually varies with players.
I don't know. You know, for me, I was ready to go again. You know, that feeling of having, you know, just to play, you know, be with a group of guys like I had. You know, it was fun. You know, and I was ready to go, you know, right away. But you know, I don't think it the party and enjoying the moment lasts long because it's how the season has went this year. And the time we're going to start back. So I feel like we enjoy the moment that we have and get back to it.
Hey, you got to hang on to this, right? No parade, but you're celebrating with family in other ways. And I have to compliment you because you're wearing a shirt, unlike several of your teammates who I think J.R. Smith, once again, second time around for him as a champion, I still don't think he has put a shirt back on. He took that shirt off during your guys' game six before it was even over. And as far as I've seen, that shirt has not come back on yet again. So congratulations, not only a title, but being fully clothed. We really do appreciate that. I will say that Lakers fans can sometimes be a tough crowd to please, right? And it's not just you. I want to play some sound from Danny Green. This was after he missed what would have been that game-winning three back in game five of the NBA Finals. Take a listen.
It's a basketball game. You know, people are emotional. Fans are emotional. I hope they don't take it that seriously. I hope that they're that passionate about voting or getting justice for these people who deserve the justice. You know, we'll get some better change along the country. But it's a basketball game in the day, and I know that they're just taking out their emotions and they need somebody to blame. And came down to that last play, and of course, I'm the easy target.
I thought it was so interesting what he said there, not just that part, but actually what I thought was even more interesting. He said, it doesn't bother me that much because he said, I've been conditioned by Lakers fans all year and throughout the bubble being critical of me. You had Lakers fans critical of you, frankly, since the moment you signed that contract. How tough has it been to weather that storm to get to this point and then have everyone turn around and be so happy with you during this final series?
I feel like LA fans, they have their expectations, you know, of their team, you know, and I respect that. They hold you accountable, you know. So I just feel like, you know, they real diehard fans, you know, they expect you to be at your best, you know, because of the organization, you know, you're in LA, you know, it's the Lakers, Kobe has ran the town, you know, the team for 20 years. So they it's a high expectation from the fans. And I respect that.
I always tell people when they come and play in LA, it's so much more than basketball. Obviously, being a Laker is on the biggest stage. You're under a magnifying glass, and your every move is critiqued on and off the court. Obviously, I started off on the wrong foot coming to LA, you know, with the ball fake with Kobe. And when I tell you I got death threats and you better never show your face in LA and all that, but I won the crowd over. You've been able to win the crowd over with your play. But it makes it that much sweeter when you've had to hear it all year and then you finally get to hold up the trophy for a city that at the end of the day really loves you, but they don't settle for anything but perfection.
Yeah, and I can say it's like a love-hate relationship. You know, they be on you. They expect your best, you know, and they love you regardless, but they expect the best.
Absolutely. You seemed really comfortable in the bullpen, particularly in the finals. I think you played great. You were definitely one of the sparks. But when I was talking about the bubble, I said it's probably going to help the youngest players the most, mostly the Miami Heat, because they're not going to have to come into L.A. And know what it's like to play in a Game 5 crowd going crazy, screaming at you. How did you feel and how comfortable were you in that bubble playing, that, considering there was really no crowd there?
I felt very comfortable. You know, I felt like it was less distractions, you know, where you can just really focus in on a game. You know, you can hear calls from the bench if the coaches is like basically, you know, calling from the bench, like with the crowd, you know, it's hard to hear when the crowd is really like, you know, going. So I felt like it was, for me, it was less distraction. I could focus and get the job done.
So you have a player option with the Lakers next season, and it is officially the offseason now. You're going to have to start to make some of these decisions. You could probably get not just more money somewhere else, almost double somewhere else, but playing on a championship team has a lot of value. Playing in LA has a lot of value. Are you planning on returning to the Lakers?
It was nothing in the world that I would love to come back, you know, to defend the title, you know, that. Like I said, the moment of just holding that trophy up, you know, gave me, you know, more motivation and inspired me to, you know, try to get it again. But, you know, I do have that option. You know, I'm going to leave it up to my agent to handle that side of the business. And like I've been doing for 7 years straight, I'm just going to worry about my game, you know, keep perfecting that.
Well, worrying about your game has certainly paid off. Congratulations. I cannot tell you how happy I am for you. The idea of what you sort of battled through and focused and the way that you worked, I have watched it every day. I got to see you up close even more in the bubble. So impressive, the contributions you made to that team in the finals. And you are very much an NBA champion. We're going to look forward to seeing what you do next, sir.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Coming up, where do the Rockets go from here after their GM, Daryl Morey, stepped down and one of their leading coaching candidates, Ty Lue, took the Clippers job? We will discuss. Stick with us. We have a lightweight unification bout on Saturday night, 12-round main event in Las Vegas. Our coverage begins 10 o'clock Eastern on ESPN, Deportes, and the app. Welcome back to The Jump. Woj's dual bombshell this morning, reporting that Rockets GM Daryl Morey is stepping down. And also, one of Houston's top head coaching candidates, Ty Lue, is now going to be the next Clippers coach. So, Amin, how does all of this impact Houston's search for a new head coach and what their future looks like?
Well, yeah, you know, Ty Lue obviously was one of the lead candidates considered for that Rockets job. He's a guy that, you know, for the same reasons why we think he's going to be good with the Clippers, the Rockets need some of that too. A guy who can get across the superstars and get them to buy in, kind of like he did in Cleveland with LeBron. So that's a pretty big blow for them. But the bigger thing is, with Daryl Morey out now, do I want to hire a coach, or do I want to get a GM to pick the coach? Because obviously the new GM is going, the new GM, Raphael Stone, is going to have an idea of how he wants to run things. And it may not be the same sort of path or course we were going under. And of course, hovering over all of this is Tillman Fertitta, the owner of the team, because he might have ideas of who he wants to be the next head coach. So there's a lot of soul searching that needs to happen, I think, upstairs before they can come to a decision on who's running the team in that locker room.
I've been hearing Jeff Van Gundy's name, and I think, you know, obviously you don't want to jump ahead, but I think he's someone that can definitely help that team and possibly get the best out of James Harden. He's someone that is a great basketball mind. He'll hold James accountable on both ends. And some people might say, man, he's been out of the NBA for 10 years, but I trust that he's smart enough to know he needs to surround himself with coaches that have still been in the game since he's left. But he's someone, like I said, one of the best basketball minds in the game, very good at communicating, and someone that's going to hold guys accountable.
And someone who, frankly, is sort of, even though he's been out of the game for a while, has out of the coaching game, has been in the game. I mean, he's been not only a commentator with us, which matters. I mean, you're sitting in all of those meetings with all the teams. You're picking up ideas from all the coaches around the league. But he's been so active in USA Basketball in recent years and really developed guys and coached guys at really high levels. So I think that that's going to have an impact here, too, with Jeff's candidacy. I mean, I'm curious if you think he is a good fit for this particular job. I thought that the Rockets' job might not be Ty's best option, but that Ty might be the Rockets' best option only because he is so good and has a track record of being able to communicate with and stand up to superstars. And he is such a great X and O guy and able to maybe put James Harden or Russell Westbrook in good position. Where do you think Jeff Van Gundy would fit doing those types of things?
First of all, 1,000% I agree with you on Ty Lue. But moving on to Jeff, this is what I'm going to say. What Matt said is absolutely accurate. Jeff is a great mind and he's a great communicator. Here's the problem. Jeff coached this league at a very different time where you could coach players in a certain way. So even if Jeff's philosophies on pick and rolls and defensive coverages and all that have evolved over time, I don't know if his approach on how he deals with players has evolved. And that's a very real thing. Yes, he's been coaching with the USA Select team. Yes, he's been very successful. But to me, that's the perfect Jeff Van Gundy coaching laboratory. Players that don't have egos, that don't have multi-million dollar contracts. There's no owner or front office that's on you, telling you gotta play this guy, you gotta play that guy. You are simply just coaching the purest form of basketball from players who want to be coached, who are looking at Jeff Van Gundy and say, wow, this guy can help me get to the next level. It's a different story when you're talking about superstars of today. It's not the Patrick Ewings and the Tracy McGrady's of years past. These guys are different. And I'm going to tell you right now, Rachel, Jeff, I love him, and he does a great job for us at this network. And part of doing a great job is sometimes saying hard things about players. And the Rockets have had some hard things said about them by Jeff Van Gundy. How's that going to go over with that locker room, I wonder?
So you're saying he's too good at his job.
I think that maybe that's something they need, though. They need, you know, Mike D'Antoni. I don't know. I never played for him, but it's a pretty free-flowing philosophy, it looks like. And maybe that's what they need. They need to tighten their belt up and have everyone held accountable. That's what all the great coaches do. They hold the 13th player. I remember Phil Jackson would talk to Kobe like he would talk to the last guy on the bench. He expects everything, the same thing from everybody. So maybe that's what the Rockets need. But I do agree, obviously, being out of touch for a little while, but maybe the old school method of tough love is what the Rockets need to get over the hump.
It's going to be so interesting to watch how this develops. Coming up, we are going to have rapper and Laker fan extraordinaire Lil Wayne joining the show to discuss his team winning the title, the virtual fan experience, and where LeBron stands in his mind in the all-time Lakers pantheon. Stick around. Coming up next on The Jump, Lil Wayne's for you. Welcome back to The Jump. Rachel Nichols still here with Matt Barnes. We're being rejoined by Amin Al-Hassan. Thanks, Amin, for coming back to hang out with us. And I want to get to some news around the sports world that may have an impact on the NBA's approach to next season. In the NFL, the Atlanta Falcons have had a positive test from a player personnel official. Not a player himself, a personnel official. They have shut down their practice facility, citing, quote, an abundance of caution, according to our Adam Schefter. And in college football, Alabama head coach Nick Saban testing positive for coronavirus. He said he's asymptomatic so far, but he is now isolating himself. So, I mean, with all of these things happening across the sports world, do you expect the NBA to give more thought to another bubble-like environment for next season, whether that's one bubble or little pods of bubbles? I know that the players have been pushing back on being away from their families again in any kind of way, but we do see what keeps happening in football.
Yeah, Rachel, I think one of the telling signs is 6-7 weeks ago, the NBA word was, next season, we're absolutely not doing a bubble. And now, last week, I heard them say, next season, we want to have fans, or we're going to be in arenas for at least part of the bubble, for part of the season, right? So they've opened the door to maybe starting the season in a bubble, or bubbles, as you point out, and then transitioning to arenas again, or something more normal. And a lot of that is to do with the science. Remember, this isn't the NBA's decision. We're just going off of what the science is. What do we have available to us? But if we do come into a bubble-type scenario part two, Reza, I expect them to do something like stages, where stage one is, say, January to mid-February, and then everyone goes home for a week, and you get tested every single day, and you got to keep testing negative, and then you come back for another stage, another 6 weeks, and then back and forth to ease in and soften that harshness of being away from your family.
I mean, you must have been talking to the producer with me, because that's exactly what my idea was. You know, if the NBA is looking at, you know, throwing them back in the bubble, whether it's for part of the season or a whole season, I think it's going to have to be regional bubbles. I don't think you obviously can keep them away from their families and friends that long. And then, like Amin said, it would be a certain amount of time in the bubble. Everyone gets a week off, and then you go to your next bubble. Like I said, I think there should probably be bubbles with different sets of teams around the NBA, but we never know. We're just going to have to see where the world is when the NBA season starts. But, you know, for the football people that have tested positive, this is going to continue to happen, because although you need to move with extreme precaution, you just never know who you've come in contact with and who they've come in contact with. So these people are going from games to practices back home every single day, and we don't really know what that environment's like. So I'm sure no one's out there being reckless, but at the same time, this is going to continue to happen, and this is something they're going to have to deal with, because I don't see college or the NFL going into any kind of bubble situation.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the science and the science dictating a lot of this. First of all, I would like to commend the NBA for leaning so heavily into the science, right? That they really relied on science and scientists to put the bubble together. The idea with masks and testing and distancing and cleanliness and all of those kinds of things, it worked. I mean, they went more than 3 months without a single player testing positive. That is an accomplishment, and I think they will lean into the science again for next season. But what that science is, maybe if it's not a vaccine or antiviral treatment, it might be rapid testing, is something that we've heard Adam Silver talk about a lot. And the idea that you could have a 5-minute test result that would tell you, are you allowed to come into the facility today? Are fans allowed to be there? Part of it, though, aside from the science, is how much as a league are they comfortable with risk? And there's always going to be some risk if you leave your house right now, right? All of us face risk if we go to the grocery store, if we come into work, if we do other things like that. And it's just, where is your level of comfort with risk? The NFL and college football have shown that their level of comfort with risk is actually pretty high, right? That they have expected positive tests. Those are built in to kind of the system that they have set up. And hopefully, you know, it was great hearing that Nick Saban is asymptomatic. He is in his late 60s. You hope that having that acceptable level of risk being a little bit higher doesn't result in anyone getting significantly sick or you know, anything worse. And so far, they've been able to move along. We haven't heard of anyone in college football, in NFL, in baseball coming down and being seriously sick. And that's, I mean, gosh, that's great, right? I mean, that's what you want. So we will see where the level of risk and the science come together. And hopefully, just like those other sports, the NBA can have positive results. Negative positive results, positive negative results. One of those. Coming up next, we got Lil Wayne still joining us. He will talk all things Lakers after this break.
Welcome once again to the NBA bubble in a season like no other. This year's NBA Finals have suddenly become great theater. Fascinating to see how both teams react after that thriller on Friday night. Time for LeBron James. James goes to the rim once again, lays it up and in.
Trying to win himself another ring.
Oh, Rajon Rondo putting on a show.
This game has completely gotten away from Miami.
James goes inside, the flush and the foul. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Organization want their respect, Laker Nation want their respect, and I want my damn respect too.
I know someone who was watching all of that with joy. We are thrilled to be joined by Grammy-winning artist, longtime Laker fan, Lil Wayne. Check out Weezy's playlist on Amazon Music titled Handpicked with Lil Wayne, Songs for Game Day. He's also the host of Young Money Radio on Apple Music. And he's our guest on The Jump. First off, I gotta do this. I gotta show a quick clip of our colleague Brian Windhorst talking about an interaction he had with you at a Lakers game, just showing what a big fan you are. Take a look real quick.
Hey, you know what? Like a decade ago, I said hi to Lil Wayne at a game, and he said, man, call me Weezy.
That exchange is so perfect, I can't even follow it up.
That was amazing because you got Brian Windhorst, who lives in Omaha, Nebraska, to use the word Weezy. I really appreciate that. You have an incredible catalog of nicknames, my friend, none of which I'm really cool enough to say on TV. What are you going by nowadays?
I go by Toon.
All right. Take it off the Twitter handle, Lil Toonichi, we got it.
Yeah, that's it.
How important, obviously, Wayne, anytime the Lakers can win a championship, it's amazing, but how much more important and special was it that it happened the year that we unfortunately lost our brother Kobe Bryant?
Oh, man. First of all, rest in paradise, Kobe, rest in paradise, Gigi, and everybody else involved in that tragedy. Man, not only it was important for Bryant, I think it's important for the whole team in the city of, and I mean Los Angeles, period, just for basketball overall, just to see success at its highest peak. And LeBron is King James, and just to see him overcome that, see everybody overcome that, not only that team, the NBA overall, the NBA as a whole, everybody overcome everything we're dealing with. And just still to see success and smile and confetti, and you know what I mean, and for it to be memorable and all that is value is awesome. It's awesome. It's actually unexplainable, truthfully.
So you were a virtual fan. I did the virtual fan thing. I think Rachel did it as well. It's a weird experience. What was that like for you?
Man, it was awesome. First of all, I didn't know that. They got the virtual thing. They got this thing, bro. They got this magic. So like, listen, if you have a shirt that they don't want you to show, you can drop it. Yes, bro. You can drop it in the screen, and for some reason, it is totally invisible, but you're still there. So every time I did it, every time I was in the crowd, I did that like 50 times. Just to say, it was magic. It was awesome, though. It was awesome.
You can talk to the people in your section too, and they can talk to you. What was that like? Were people like, oh my God, Weezy's here. What was it like?
Exactly. That right there, I was one of those people. I was one of the people like, hold up. I was like, y'all can hear me? And so we had, man, and the conversation went from, I mean, we stopped even, I think we were talking about everything else but the game.
That's part of the experience I don't think people quite realize, and I don't know if virtual fan is going to carry over until next season at all, but it's really fun, and it's something that I think is a great example of how the NBA took a situation that was really difficult, having no fans in the stands,
exactly,
and at least put a little bit of twist on it. We still got all the celebrity Lakers fans showing out, which was a lot of fun, especially with you there. Yeah. I do want to follow up a little bit on what Matt asked you about Kobe, because you posted a beautiful photo on IG of the two of you, caption and another one. I just want to know, given your relationship with him, what it has been like for you to go through this year with his just tragic loss in January, and then to go through with all of the COVID circumstances that we've had, and to normally have basketball be the thing that you turn to, I know, to have a little joy, to have a little fun, and not to be able to go down to Staples Center, but then now follow this team through a playoff months later.
Overall, obviously, it means a lot to everyone as well. I mean, like it does. But I think overall for me, I think that the main thing, the relationship with Kobe, it was, you know, big brother type of thing. But once we met the last time we met, we had a conversation. conversation that, you can't get that conversation from anyone but someone that has real respect and real love and real honor for you, and care about what you do. And once I had that conversation with him, it didn't change anything, because he was always, I always had the utmost respect for him and always still will. But that conversation right there taught me something different. I've seen him plenty of times. We've talked. He's writing my lyrics back to me, and that always mean the most to me. But sitting down talking to him and him talking, that's something in itself.
Yeah, no, that's so amazing, and something we're all, anytime someone passes like that, you treasure every moment. I do want to ask you about the Lakers pantheon here, because we have discussions, the MJ, who's the GOAT, the LeBron discussion is one thing, but then once you get
y'all about to do this.
No, I'm going to ask you something totally different. I'm going to ask you something different, that's what I'm saying. I'm more interested in this question. Which is not who's the best player to ever put on a Laker uniform. I want to know who you think is the best Laker. And there's a difference, right? In the pantheon of who is the best Laker, you got Magic, you got Kobe, you got Kareem.
Yeah.
Where does LeBron, obviously, before he won a title, he couldn't even be in that discussion for who is the best Laker as a Laker. Now that he's won a title as a Laker, where does he rank for you among Lakers greats, not just overall, but as a Laker?
Rachel, honestly, as a Laker, I think it just go down. I think it goes down because they're all the greatest.
That's spoken like a Laker fan.
All great.
Yeah,
that's the answer.
Honestly, he's right where he's at.
Matt, I want to know what you think.
I definitely think LeBron has done a great job. He's only been here 2 years, and he was able to bring a championship back to L.A. We talked about it last week was – there's Kobe fans and there's Laker fans.
Yes.
And I think when LeBron first came here, he got a lot of pushback. And I think he had to earn the respect of these, not only Laker fans, but these Kobe fans. And I think he's definitely done that. And they're odds on favor to win it next year. You know what I mean? So I definitely think there was a winning over process where he can kind of have a exhale because he has brought a ring back. But, the pressure doesn't stop. They don't expect one. They expect multiples when you're a Laker great. So I'm excited to see what's coming for the next couple of years for Bron here.
Yeah. Wait, I got a question for you. Over this summer, you had Young Money Radio, and you kind of switched roles. Usually people are asking you questions like we're doing today.
Yeah.
You became the interviewer. What was that like for you to switch roles and be the guy who asked the questions instead of being asked questions?
I'm not gonna sound cliche, but it was interesting, man. Mm. It was just to find out things and just to, when you're off air to talk about things that people, to find out things people know about yourself that you didn't even know they cared about, things like that. So and then for them to find out the same thing from me, that was awesome. It was very interesting, unique, but it was dope.
All right, so here's my interview question to you. I'm gonna turn it around on you. Are the Lakers gonna repeat? Are we getting a double title here?
Do birds fly?
Oh!
And there you go. Why do you think that? Tell me. Because by the way, Kevin Durant's coming back. The Warriors are coming back. The teams that weren't even in the mix this year are coming back, plus the Heat, plus the Bucks, plus the Rockets. There's a lot of teams going on. The Nuggets.
Let's not forget to mention Phoenix didn't even lose in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I think that is because AD and LeBron is coming back as well.
That is the truth.
Plain and simple.
This man has a lot of confidence. By the way, you are the first one to do an appearance on the jump in the back of a tricked out Sprinter van.
Big time.
So I would like to respect all the respect for you. We are always so impressed by you. You are multi-talented. You do a million different things.
Thank you.
Your music has meant so much to so many people, including all of us here on this set today. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Woj. Thank you to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. The Jump will be back tomorrow. See ya.
Thank you.